Okay, I can think we can begin. So, hi everybody, welcome to my session today. I'm Kai from Confluent, and I want to talk about how to build a mission-critical, scalable architecture for machine learning with the Apache Kafka ecosystem. So, a lot of buzzwords in there and also on the screen, as you see. But I want to show you how you can combine them together and how other companies are doing that. Before I begin, as first, I want to do a little poll to understand the audience here. So, if you're using Apache Kafka already, who's using that on-premise already? Hands up. So, okay, that's half of the room. That's good. Who's using it also on the cloud, public cloud, Amazon, Azure, Google? That's only a few people. And then, who's using your own private virtual cloud like Kubernetes, Mesosphere, or something like that? That's also good, a third of the room. And who's not using Kafka in the room? Okay, a few people still. That's good, but maybe you use it afterwards. Okay, thank you. So, the agenda for this talk here, really, I want to focus on explaining how other of our customers leverage Apache Kafka and its open source ecosystem for building machine learning infrastructures. And for that, really a very short introduction about what we mean with machine learning. We had a lot of other talks at this conference about machine learning and frameworks, just that we have the same understanding about that. And then I will really focus on how you can leverage the Apache Kafka ecosystem for that. And in the end, really, that means for data ingestion and pre-processing, so before you build analytic models, and then afterwards for deployment, for inference, for monitoring the stuff. And that's really the main goal of this. I will also show a short live demo and some code during the talk. Let's begin really very short about what we understand under machine learning, that we have the same understanding about what we talk about. And in the end, this picture really depicts what we mean with machine learning here. It means that you find hidden insights without being explicitly programmed. That's really the goal, what you do. So you have different data sets, unstructured data, semi-structured, structured, and you have to analyze it somehow. And you cannot do that with if-else or for loops like you did standard programming in the past. And that's why you use these kind of algorithms for that. There are many different ones, like decision trees or clustering. And then, of course, one of these buzzwords also at this conference is deep learning, the neural networks, where you do things like convolutional neural networks for image recognition or autoencoders for anomaly detection. So you see here, machine learning, that's a lot of buzzwords and algorithms under the hood. I think the main thing to point out is there is not the single one solution which fits for every problem. So deep learning is great for image recognition and speech translation and these things. But for many other things, it's not the best solutions. It's high computage needed. It's not really interpretable. So it's always trade-offs, and there are many different algorithms, and you choose the right one for your business problem. And with that, let's think about a few real-world examples of machine learning. The first good example is spam detection. That's very old, but it already still shows you that you need something like a machine which helps you interpreting if it's spam or not, because you cannot write that with if-else. If you want to write if-else for every spam of the billions of different spam messages, that's not possible. And therefore, the machine has to learn that for you and give you the probability of spam likelihood. But this gets more and more powerful. For example, if you do a search today on Google or on another search engine, you get different customized results. Every person gets different ones. And with that, also different advertisement, of course. So that's how Google and all the others make their money, right? That's the intelligence under the hood. In the meantime, when you upload a picture to Facebook, it analyzes this picture. So it's getting more and more powerful. It knows which people are on the picture. It knows where you are. It knows what beer you drink in your hand and all these things. So you can analyze it completely in a second, right? That's very, very powerful. And this is continuing. So in the meantime, with machine learning and deep learning, you can build more intelligent apps. So for example, the famous thing about Go or AlphaGo, where a machine learning algorithm beat the most professional Go players. And Go is much more complex than chess. And that shows it's really learning and doing better and better and more complex things. And the goal of this talk today is to explain you how some companies now leverage machine learning in their own company. So, and that's really the important thing, because we heard at this conference a lot of fancy things about image recognition and all these things. That's great, and there is great use cases already for that. But what we see more is that many of the traditional companies, so the non-tech companies, I would say, they have traditional business processes. Like you want to do things like fraud detection or cross-selling while the customer is in your retailer store, Or in logistics, you want to do things like rerouting of transportation. Or then in the longer term, you want to do things like predictive maintenance or inventory management. So that's the traditional use cases a business has in any kind of industry. And even here, you can leverage machine learning a lot. And that's what we see a lot of enterprises doing right now. While they also do the fancy things like image recognition and speech translation, this is really where you can also add a lot of value for your critical business events. And for that, then we see a lot of programming languages, mostly R or Python from a data science perspective, and many, many different frameworks. So at this conference, we hear a lot about MXNet or TensorFlow, mostly for deep learning, so really just one part of the whole machine learning ecosystem. And there's many more, and there's also standards that you can use. And the real point is there is not a single all-rounder for every problem. So you will have to use different algorithms and frameworks. And this is also evolving quickly, so nobody knows what's on in 2 years for deep learning or machine learning. And so you have to choose for your problem, but still have to build this architecture where you can deploy all of these models and do the right predictions for your problem. And that's the first challenge, and there is an even bigger challenge, because typically when you take a look at deep learning examples, and it's funny, the same slide was shown in the talk before this one, so it's really very valid. So because when you see examples from, for example, TensorFlow on a website, right, it's typically 20 lines of Python code, and they do great things like recognizing numbers and pictures or doing other predictions, and that's awesome. But that's really just a small part. Writing a little bit of code, that's the small thing in the middle here. But really bringing that into production, that's the key challenge which we see at so many different companies. Because that's already a hard thing to write this code that it works well. But deploy that to production, it has so much to do around that, like collecting all the different data sets, pre-processing them, finding the right features of the data where you want to use to build the models. And then after you deploy it, you have to do things like serving them in real time at scale. You have to monitor that, does it work, redeploy improved models, and all these things. So it's much, much more than just writing a few lines of Python code for building a model. Deploying it at scale 24/7 is a completely different story. And that's in the end why we come to this talk and why we come to the Apache Kafka ecosystem, which is used a lot in these kind of scenarios then. Really, it's not just about building one model. It's really about the infrastructure at scale, 24/7 mission critical deployment and training of models. For the few people which don't use Kafka yet, so it's only a few people in the room, we learned. Kafka is what we call a streaming platform, so it's not just a messaging layer. You can send messages from A to B, right? That is what it was built for at LinkedIn 8 years ago. Send all the log files at terabyte scale or more to the Hadoop cluster and process it there. That was the first use case. In the meantime, we see many, many other use cases for Kafka. I would say at least I'm based in Europe, and there are only 20% or so of the use cases are this kind of big data ingestion or so. We see many other use cases where it's really more about critical deployment of business applications, where you do things like payments or fraud detection or manufacturing. That's really what's going on with Kafka, and it's not just the ingestion into a Hadoop story. That's just one part of it. So here's just two examples before we focus more on the machine learning story. But to give you two examples from 2018, LinkedIn had a presentation at Strata conference this year where they explained that they, in the meantime, process over 4.5 trillion messages a day with Kafka. And on the other side, Netflix, for example, talked about Q-Command about that, and at peak, they process over 6 petabytes per day. So typically, and that's the same experience when we work with customers and Kafka deployments, it's not really about does it scale well, is it battle-tested, does it work well. That's proven by many, many different companies, and you can read about all that in detail from these companies. And not just the tech giants, by the way. So there's also the traditional companies like banks, telcos, retailers, which also have the same similar stories about their Kafka deployments. With that then, let's think now about machine learning and use cases. And so I have a few examples here. The first one is Netflix again. they have built a recommendation engine. And under the hood, it has to process a lot of data because for every end user on every device, like the TV, the mobile phone, every user gets different results, a recommendation for what he has to watch or what he can watch, what probably he likes. And on every different user gets different results here. And under the hood, it's again the machine learning story. You cannot program this by yourself for every user with if else and for loops. That's the first example. Another one is Uber. They have Michelangelo as their machine learning platform. It's an end-to-end ML workflow platform. And what's really key here, and that's what we see of most of these platforms, it's not just focusing on one technology like you see here on the right. It's really an ecosystem for machine learning infrastructures where you can then use different frameworks to train model and then to deploy them somewhere for serving. And that's critical because depending on the use case, you need different technologies and algorithms. We hear a lot about TensorFlow and deep learning. That's great, but it's not the best solution for every problem for many different reasons. Third example is PayPal. They do fraud detection in real time at scale. And that's also another critical use case. So here you see the examples are really not just about the things which are data ingestion into a batch processing store, but really at scale building mission critical systems. If this system is down, then the payments do not work anymore, or you cannot detect fraud for the payments. For Netflix, for example, with the recommendation engine, it's not that big problem. You only don't get the recommendations, but there is other scenarios. If these services don't work anymore, the user experience is worse. And that's also bad for these kind of companies. And now, this was just three examples. And you can read a lot about that more in the links. And I will also share the slides afterwards. And there's plenty more available on the web. The point about them, all of these also use Apache Kafka under the hood for several reasons. And therefore, let's think a little bit more about the relation between Apache Kafka and machine learning. So if you don't have much experience with machine learning in the end, it's under the hood, it's two different steps which you have to do. First, you have to build an analytic model. That's the first part. You use a lot of historical data to train models. And then after you have a good model with good accuracy, you deploy it somewhere to do predictions. That's two separated steps which are completely independent. And in many use cases, you'd, for example, train the model in the cloud at scale with GPUs and all these things and stop the instances after you have trained the model. And then you deploy the model somewhere else, maybe at the edge, right, on premise. So how does this work with Kafka as you see here or in general? You get a lot of different historical data sets. And then you have to transport them somewhere to train the model. That's the big data store where you have all the data and train the model on top of that. And then when you have a good model, you have to deploy it somewhere in a production app to do predictions, sometimes in real time, sometimes also in batch. That depends on the use cases. And so Apache Kafka is just the core of the ecosystem which people use here. So the open source ecosystem of Kafka has many components in the meantime. Even just the Apache Kafka open source project from the Apache website already has two more components, which are Kafka Connect for integrating systems and Kafka Streams for doing stream processing natively on Kafka. That's what many people already don't know when they talk about Kafka. They think about the messaging layer with the persistent storage. But even the Apache project already has Kafka Connect included and Kafka Streams. So it's really much, much more than just sending data from A to B. And with that, there is many other components on top, like, for example, a REST proxy if you want to communicate with Kafka via HTTP. Or you can, for example, use a schema registry if you want to enforce that all the different components have a schema. So that's in the end what I will now go into much more deep dive to explain you how you can build such a pipeline and also give a short live demo afterwards. Before that, I have another poll here. As most of you use Apache Kafka, I wonder who's using other components. So first of all, who of you is also using Kafka Connect for integration with different systems? That's a few of you, okay, so 10 people or so. We're using Kafka Streams for stream processing, also a few. And then some other Confluent open source, like the REST proxy, KSQL, schema registry, that's 3, 5, 4 people. Or other open source add-ons, Kafka Manager for UI, any other clients or whatever. So OK, that's not many. OK, and we're using only Kafka really for things like data ingestion into Hadoop, so just the messaging layer. So that's also a lot of them, OK. So it's very separated, many different people, different use cases, that makes sense. So one thing, and there's several arguments why so many people use Kafka, but one really relevant thing, especially for machine learning, is the benefit of having a log under the hood. Because if you think about that, in machine learning, you typically don't train just one model. You train different models with different configurations and hyperparameters, and then you evaluate which one is the best model. And for that, you have to reprocess the data all the time, and event by event. And what's better than Kafka for that, right? If you want to train the model and consume the same data again and again. And you can even, for example, build with one framework like TensorFlow different models and compare them. Or later you can use another framework and build a model. So let's say TensorFlow works well for now, but in a year there comes a cool new framework which you want to evaluate. Maybe it's better. Like in this example, I've put something in like DataRobot, which is an AutoML technology. That means it takes over a lot of the efforts which the data scientist has to do, like feature engineering or like other evaluating and comparing the different models. So it's just saying you can also use different technologies and consume the same data from the log again. And depending on your retention time, even the old data, which is a year old, to build models on that again. So with that, let's now think about the two parts of building analytic models. So again, it's first model training based on historical data, typically big data sets, to get models. And then the second step afterwards is to deploy them to production. Let's first think about training models and getting the data into there. So because training the model, that's not the Kafka part. That's the things which you do with TensorFlow or MXNet or any other framework for machine learning. But first you have to get the data in. And therefore, if we go back to this picture here, it's really to ingesting all the data. So now the picture is back, gone, let's see. I hope it comes back. Okay, now we are back. So hopefully it will work for the rest of the talk. So, no, damn it. So I will play around a little bit more. And hope. Come on. Because just without slides, it's not that fun. Let me just drop it off again. It worked for the last 20 minutes, so why is it not working anymore? Maybe a carousel rotating. Do we have maybe another adapter? I don't know for this thing. No, I don't touch it anymore. Okay, let's try it this way. okay, so I don't see it here anymore. Okay, now it works again. Okay, so for the data integration part, when you want to get the data into Kafka, you can do that with any technology you want, right? So like an ETL tool or whatever. You can also use, however, Kafka Connect, which is based on Kafka under the hood. So it has all the advantages: high throughput, high scalability, failover, reliability, and all these things. And then you have a lot of connectors available for that, like getting into the IoT data or syslog or whatever you want to connect to and get it into the Kafka ecosystem. That has a lot of benefits and makes it much easier to do the integration at scale with Kafka also for the integration part. And here's just one example of how you do such a configuration. So in this case, we use an MQTT connector to get the data, and we configure how to map the MQTT topics in this case to some Kafka topics, and maybe some other transformations or ETL functions as part of this integration, right? That's the first step, get the data from the pipeline into Kafka from everywhere, at scale, for high throughput if you need that. And then what you also have to do typically is some kind of data pre-processing. That's what in the Hello World examples, which you see with when you go to the TensorFlow website, it's not then 20 lines of Python code, but it's then 100 lines, and there is some pre-processing included. The problem with that is that works well for the Hello World example, but when the data scientist then wants to bring that into production, then that doesn't work anymore for hundreds of thousands of data events. And that's the main problem we see at customers, how data scientists work together with engineers. Because if you don't talk to each other from the beginning, this will not work. Because just building a model in Python is a great thing, but deploying all the pipeline into production later at scale, 24/7 availability, that's a completely different story. And so what we see more and more is that the data scientists and the engineers, the developers, work together from the beginning to build a pipeline which works well for both sides. Right. So, and data pre-processing is a key part of machine learning. For the data scientists, it typically takes 60-70% of their work. It's not so much configuring the model parameters, but more data pre-processing and analysis. And so that's what you also can do based on the Kafka pipeline. Here is one example. So either you can natively on Kafka use Kafka Streams, which is Java coding, or you can also use KSQL, which is a framework on top of that. Okay, so here is an example of KSQL. Do you have?
Change the HDMI just to be
safe. Okay, we're trying to change the HDMI cable. So, let's try it here. And now one more time here. Ah, now it's in. So let's see. This has no picture at all. No, I think it's some other problem with the adapter, maybe. So let's hope it. Maybe I have to do it every 5 minutes. I'm sorry for that. But this is one example of KSQL. So with Kafka Streams and Java code, or with KSQL with just writing SQL-like queries, you can do the processing of data. So let's say you have an input stream with clickstream data, and then you want to join it with some other user data to filter in this case. This is an example of filtering now. But this can be done for any kind of pre-processing, like transformations, enrichments, or any other even more powerful things. And with KSQL, the huge benefit of that is that you don't have to write Java code, but it scales in the same way. That's the huge benefit of that. Oh, that drives me crazy. So maybe I have to click faster and then we will see. No. Come on. I'm really sorry for that.
Is there a special position that works very good?
No, it's... I don't know. It seems to maybe, I don't know. Otherwise, I mean, I can talk a lot without slides, but it's not as nice for you probably. No, it's only one. So, anyway, okay, maybe you stay here and hold it that way. Let's see if that works, but I doubt it, but we will see. So the other point is then after pre-processing the data, then you have to ingest it somewhere. Because as I said, using the machine learning framework to train the data, that's a different problem. That's used by things like TensorFlow or with Spark ML or whatever, right? And therefore, for ingestion into something like into Hadoop or AWS S3 or Google Cloud Storage, there again use Kafka Connect. It's just a connector. It's the scalability of Kafka under the hood with all of the advantages for that. I think I still continue even without picture because otherwise the time will run out. But I hopefully you have good imagination also. And also you can, of course, listen to me. So. Yes, and they're on the Apache website. They are also on my blog and on my SlideShare. Can we use that? Oh, he already has it. Oh, that's great. Can we try another? Let me see. That would be great if that works. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Where's the, what's HDMI? Is it on the right side? Yeah, it's here. If that also doesn't work, then it's not my fault. Okay, let's try it here. Thank you. So, okay, so here now we are. So, I just need to find out. Okay, so here we are. We have to ingest the data somehow, right? And often you just also have to ingest the data more than once, because today you store everything in S3, but later you find out there is this cutting-edge new technology which needs another data format somewhere else. Or we have seen so many people or companies which go multi-cloud in the meantime. So for some use cases, they store data in S3, but then for new big data analytics use cases, they transport everything to Google BigQuery or whatever. Right. Anyway, the benefit of Kafka Connect is that it really stores and leverages the feature of Kafka under the hood. So then we have the data put into some storage, whatever it is, and in whatever cloud or on-premise. Then we train the model. That's in the end not the Kafka part. That's what you do with TensorFlow, with another framework, where you build different models. And this is also what we heard in many other talks today and yesterday already, where you can really leverage the different cloud providers, because here you have the huge benefit. Typically, machine learning, or especially deep learning, is about big data sets, and it's compute intensive and expensive. And especially if you use GPUs, you pay a lot of money for that. And what's better than a public cloud where you start a new instance, train your model for a minute, an hour, even a week, but afterwards you can stop this again. And that's the way it works typically. So for model training, we see more and more people going to the cloud, especially if it's allowed from a data privacy and compliance perspective. So we see it much more in the US than in Europe, for example. So in Germany, almost nobody goes for the cloud for this, especially for privacy important data. But even there it will come. And that's in the end the process for training the model. So we ingest the data from somewhere, we pre-process the data, and then we ingest it into a storage like HDFS or S3, where we train our model. So that's the first of the two parts. And the key really is it typically has to be reliable and scalable. Because another thing we see more and more is that even if it starts with a small use case, it gets bigger and bigger, and it gets more critical use cases. And if you cannot do that just with a Python script, right? You need to do it in a scalable pipeline. And after you have built your model, then we think about how to deploy that. So on the right side, we have trained the model, and now we want to deploy to production. Because another key lesson learned is you need to add business value to your project. So get something out of it. Reduce costs, reduce risk, increase revenue, make customers happy. You really, from the beginning, have to think about what's the added value. And also, how do I need to deploy and scale it to get this added value? And therefore, here we see again, we want to do model serving. There's many terms for this: serving, inference, deployment, scoring. In the end, we want to use our analytic model to do some predictions or to get some benefits out of that, of this model which we have built. And there is two different options in the end. You deploy it somewhere in some model server, and then with every time in your web application or whatever, you access that model again, or you do it directly natively in the streaming application. And that's what I will also demo in a minute. A key point here to remember is that for the predictions at real time, you also have to do that at scale. Because first, if you do at scale ingesting data into some data store to analyze the data, later you have to do the predictions at scale. For example, IoT sensor analytics, if you have thousands of sensors sending data and you want to do the predictions real time, that has to be done at scale. That can't be done with a Python script, right? And the huge benefit of this, what we have seen before, you can leverage the same things now for the predictions. Because this pipeline here from getting the sensor data, it's more or less the same for model building and the same for real-time predictions. You typically have to do the same kind of data pre-processing, like filtering or enrichment or so. And so you can leverage the same pipeline for both parts, at least grow the biggest part of this pipeline for training and then for the predictions. So I want to point out a little bit more about stream processing in general so that everybody understands what that means in these terms. And also there, I think, was other talks about Flink or Spark streaming. That's the same concepts. The main idea is that you don't do a request response anymore. So you really continuously process the data while it is in motion. That's a completely different concept, and for some people really hard to understand. If you only did web services or Oracle connections in the past, you really continuously process the data. And so if you think about that for the model deployment or doing predictions, if you want to do that for any other use case, why not also do it for the model deployment and scoring, right? And that's in the end what we will see here, the different options for that. So you can, in the same way, like you can do any other stream processing application, you can get your data into Kafka, and then natively on Kafka, you can do the stream processing. This can be anything like filtering, transformation, aggregation, sliding windows, whatever you want to do continuously. But here you can also apply your analytic model in real time without going to another server or backend again. And that's a huge advantage if you want to do that at scale and reliable and with high performance. And after you have done the prediction, then you can send it somewhere else again. This can be another Kafka application. This can be via Kafka Connect, then again another database or a web UI or whatever you want to send the information then. So this is now okay. I will skip a few of the slides because this is also the hidden slides, actually, because this is, I think, a PDF here. So just one last point here to point out. So now people always ask, okay, now we have our Hadoop cluster, we have Spark streaming, there is Flink outside, there's Storm, and then there is also Kafka streams and KSQL on the other side. And I don't really start a fad, so you have to evaluate which is the better framework for you. I just want to explain you the key difference between the two options you have. And the difference is that for all the other stream processing frameworks like Spark streaming or Flink or Storm, you have your big data cluster somewhere where you run all this data set. In addition to the Kafka cluster, which you also typically have, because 98% of the use cases I see for Spark or Flink or Hadoop, the ingestion pipeline is Kafka anyway. So you have two clusters. And for some use cases, it's fine. But especially for the use cases we see where customers build critical applications, which have to run 24/7 for payments, for recommendation engines, fraud detection. Typically, each team just wants to develop and deploy its own application without focus on another big data cluster where you have to maintain everything together and fight for resources. And the key difference between Kafka Streams and KSQL to all the other stream processing engines is that it's just a small lightweight engine. It's just a Java process, which you can run anywhere. So a Kafka Streams application, it's really a Java a library which you embed in any Java application, and then you run it, for example, in a Docker container or in Kubernetes, or maybe even in an old J2EE monolith, right? So you can run it anywhere. And that's a huge difference because each team can focus on its application without the other ones. Because you don't have another big data cluster for stream processing, you just focus on your application, right? And the point, however, is, of course, you can also scale that in the same way. So this application can be just one Java process, or you scale it to 5 to 10 to 100 of Kafka Streams applications in parallel. Why does that work, even including scalability, failover, and zero data loss? Because Kafka Streams, like Kafka Connect, under the hood uses Kafka, with Kafka topics, partitions, replication factor, and all the benefits you know from Kafka. That's also true for Kafka Streams, and therefore you can scale it out and up and down very easily. Of course, you have to manage that somehow. So that's the argument for the big data cluster. There you don't have to manage it. You just deploy it there. With Kafka Streams, you have your 10 instances. You have to manage them, either with a script or maybe with something like Kubernetes or a cloud provider which starts and stops the instances automatically, right? But it's a completely different development lifecycle for building new services, new versions, independently of all the other services. And so now let's think more about stream processing again with machine learning. In the end, we have two options. This is what I would say the traditional style of how to leverage and use machine learning. This is an example of TensorFlow, but it's pretty similar for any other framework of machine learning and when you deploy models. The first option is we have on the left side our flow of events. Here an event is coming into Kafka, and we have our business logic here. This could also be a traditional Kafka application. In this case, it's a Kafka Streams application to continuously process the data and send it to the next Kafka topic or somewhere else. In the traditional way, machine learning models are typically accessed via a serving layer. That means you send another request to another application. For TensorFlow, you, for example, use the TensorFlow serving model server. And here you use gRPC, so you do a remote procedure call to another thing. And that's a completely different concept again. That's request response, which doesn't really fit into the stream processing concepts, right? If you want to continuously process data at scale with high reliability. So it's okay for some use cases, and it also has benefits because it's easy to do. You just use gRPC, or for many other frameworks, it's HTTP, and then you get your response back. But on the other side, it's not just one application anymore. And what do you do if here is a failure, or here is the failure, or if the scale, the performance, the latency is not good enough here? There is a lot of problems you have to solve by yourself, which you can solve easily by embedding the analytic model directly into the stream processing application. So here we don't have another server where the model is hosted, but we apply it while the process is running here. So we get an event, we do our processing logic like filtering, enrichment, transformation, and then as one step here, we also process them, we apply the model to do predictions and send it out here. So you see here, it's a much better approach if you really want to do continuous processing at scale with 24/7 uptime and so on. But you can also choose. I mean, it's always a trade-off, of course. This is just the details. And now, now I can show you the live demo because I'm not on my laptop. I'm sorry for that. No, it's not possible. I also have a live demo of that on YouTube and on my blog. The main idea really was that what I have, I also have GitHub projects, which I think you see in a second here. So let's at least take a look at the code then. So this is the implementation of this. In this case here, we have our Kafka flow with different topics where we do different processing. And as one of these steps, instead of filtering or mapping or transformations, we do applying a model. This is, in this example, an H2O model. It could be a TensorFlow model, a deep learning 4J model, MXNet model, whatever you want to embed into the Kafka Streams application. And it's pretty simple. It's really just one Java class. You will see the link to GitHub examples, which are running in a minute. But the point is, it's one Java class. In this case, it's a main method. So it's really one public static void main Java class, one Java process which runs this. And this can be scaled to tens of instances and scales well with all the benefits of Kafka under the hood, like failover, high scalability, throughput, and so on. And if you take a look at the code in more detail, it's not much code because you do the configuration of the Kafka Streams application. So for example, you say, what's our Kafka cluster, the Bootstrap servers? What's the name of this application? And then do a little bit more thing, but that's it more or less. And then we apply the analytic model inside this Java application in this class. And in this case, we just do the mapping from our Kafka topic to the data format which the analytic model needs. And this is the mapping which I do here in this code. And then there is one line where I do model.predictBinomial. That's where I do the real-time prediction. I apply this model to every event in real time. And with that, that's pretty easy to do. And here you also see the GitHub example. So if you want to check that out later, or just go to my website or blog, you can find it easily. It's really that simple. You do a Maven build, and then you just run the code here. And then you can see how that works. I have different examples with TensorFlow, with H2O, with Deep Learning 4J. And it's really that simple. You just embed this model into your Kafka Streams application. So a model is different thing. So in H2O, the great thing is many of them can compile to Java code. And that's even easier to embedding that into an application. And it's very, very performant. So the example I had here for doing airline flight delay predictions, the execution of the model or the inference was microseconds. So it's really not even milliseconds often, right? So that's very, very fast. And therefore scales well. For other frameworks like TensorFlow, it's typically a binary. So TensorFlow is protobuf, the format, but it doesn't matter. Inside a Java application, you can embed anything, right, and run it there. So here's one more example to also show you how I did that with KSQL. There is also another blog post and another GitHub example. But even here, it's that simple. So we have a use case. We do sensor analytics. In this case, payment fraud detection from a car. So we see a lot of use cases with connected cars and where you have applications in the car where you can do payments and so on. And here we send this information to Kafka. And from Kafka, we do some stream processing, in this case with KSQL, to do a prediction if it's probably fraud or not. And this here with KSQL is happening with this line of code. And this line of, it's not really code, it's SQL in the end, right? And here we create a continuous stream where we select the payment ID and apply our model. So in this case, KSQL has a lot of functions like aggregate, summarize, filter, and I wrote a user-defined function. You write that once as a developer and give it then to the team, and then the team can use it from the SQL here like an Oracle UDF, and here we apply our model for this input. And this again is, even if it's just a SQL-like query, you deploy this for continuous processing. This is deployed once to a KSQL server or more of them, and then this does continuous predictions of all the events. And like Kafka Streams, even KSQL, it scales the same way. Because under the hood, it's Kafka Streams and it's Kafka, and you could deploy this for hundreds of thousands of messages per second from sensors and apply this analytic model in real time to that, without having all the efforts of having another big data cluster to doing that. You just deploy your Java or KSQL application somewhere in Docker containers and Kubernetes, and you focus only on your business application. So again, the live demo is skipped, unfortunately, but I have also this on GitHub and on YouTube. So you can take a look at that afterwards. I'm sorry for the technical problems. For that, this was now, in the end, explaining how you can leverage the Kafka ecosystem for both parts of machine learning. For the part of model training, so ingesting the data and pre-processing, and then also for doing the deployment for the inference in real time. So now also a few words about what we see at our customers, how they do the DevOps and monitoring things, because of course that's also critical for the whole ecosystem. And here also the important thing is, most of these customers don't build just one infrastructure for one framework specifically, but they build a platform independent infrastructure so that you can run different analytic models and frameworks there, and even go multi-cloud. So we see a lot of use cases where it's not just on AWS, but also on GCP. But even more important, what we see a lot, especially in Europe, is that it's hybrid. That means you train the model in the cloud because there is the scale, there is the GPUs, the instances you can start and stop and pay for it as you use it. On the other side, many of these use cases for predictions need to be that the models are deployed on-premise at the edge. For example, in the factories for the manufacturing or for the robots or even for PII data, you are not allowed to host it in the cloud. You can train the models in the cloud with anonymized data, that's fine. But you cannot deploy things like fraud detection or payment in a country like Germany in the cloud. You have to do that on-premise in your data center. And therefore, these hybrid use cases and platform independent are very, very important. And so how do we monitor all that? And before that, one other question we always get is, how do you deploy a model once, then monitor it and improve it continuously? Because this process we see here, that's not a one-time process. You have to continuously optimize your model. Depending on the use case for predictive maintenance, you might improve it every week. For other things like fraud detection or spam detection, you might have to improve it every hour or every 2 hours because it's getting changes that fast. So in general, for machine learning, you have three different options. If you want to improve the models, you do that manually after you have trained a model. We see that typically only in the first development cycles when the data scientist built his own Python scripts. When we then really see this more production-like scale, then what most customers we see do is continuous batch updating. That means it's still not a continuously trained model which updates itself, but you train a model, you deploy it, and then one day or 1 week later, you have trained the next version of the model, which is better or has newer data sets, and you replace the old model with the new one. Or first, you do things like A/B testing and all these typical concepts you have, of course. And that's typically the option we see mostly. As other options, what we also see rarely is online model training. That really means that you have one model, you deployed it, and you continuously improve that model. That's simply not available or possible for many models. It's possible for clustering, for example, but most models do not support that. And therefore, continuous batch updating is typically the way to do that. As last word about infrastructure, what we see more and more, and I think that's also a trend here at this conference, but in general, is more and more customers go towards Kubernetes for deployment for their infrastructure. That's not just related for Kafka or for machine learning, but in general for their business applications, because when you want to build independent applications, microservices, be flexible, agile, and so on, then this simply works well with Kubernetes, and Kubernetes more or less won this war, I would say. I mean, a few years ago, you had things like also, which you have still today, like Cloud Foundry or Mesosphere, but even these two now support Kubernetes on top of them, more or less because of market pressure, because Kubernetes won this war. And no matter where you run it, but Kubernetes is for most vendors the way to go forward, and therefore also for most companies I see. And also for machine learning perspective and Kafka perspective, it's a perfect fit because on the one side, of course, for the clients, here it's easy to understand. Because if you're on Kubernetes and can spin up new Docker containers easily and also stop them or start new ones in case of failure, for clients it's pretty easy, like for a Kafka Streams or a KSQL application, because they are often stateless, so it's no problem. On the other side, for the server side, for the Zookeeper and Kafka brokers, it's much, much harder to do. Anyway, many people already do it, and they have many challenges with that. But this is getting better and better, and there is also tools like a Kubernetes operator, which takes over a lot of the management, and therefore we really see this as future infrastructure at most customers. Most are not there yet today, but they are going there step by step, and they in their future strategy is to host most of their applications, client-side and server-side, on Kubernetes. So last point regarding monitoring, here really we see completely different things. So that's whatever you have in your infrastructure already. So if you're in Kubernetes, you use things like Prometheus often. Everybody has a Grafana dashboard in the meantime for some stuff. But you also have proprietary stuff like New Relic or our Confluent monitoring tools or whatever. So and that really is more a build versus buy decision. And we see so many different things, so there is no trend we see here. That depends on your existing ecosystem and what you already have, typically. So with that, let's summarize this last slide before we go to questions, the takeaways. The first point is really important for machine learning and deploy that to infrastructure which is scalable and mission critical. Data scientists and developers have to work from the beginning with each other. It doesn't help if a data scientist builds a great Python model, but you cannot deploy it or scale it afterwards. You have to work together in these projects. And that's fortunately what we see in more and more customers understood this after they had great models but couldn't deploy them to production. And so this process is fortunately changing. And also the other lessons learned is really that if you have critical models, you want to build a critical infrastructure for that, which is scalable in a way that you need. Depending on your use case, for IoT or connected cars, you need larger scale than for some small business transactions, maybe. That depends on your use case also. But typically, what we see is projects which have to be up 24/7 without downtime. And therefore, that's the reason why we see so many people and companies using the Kafka ecosystem for that, because it's really a huge benefit and great combination together with machine learning for both parts of the process, building the model and also then deploying the model. And in the end, that's it. I'm sorry again for the technical problems. And you have all the slides and videos and GitHub projects on my website also. And now I think we also have a few minutes for questions.
I thought you might mention Kafka as data storage in this process as well.
As data source for what?
As data storage.
As data storage, OK. That's another good point. We actually often get this question about data storage more and more. And actually, there is happening a lot. The discussion about Kafka as data storage is typically how is my retention time? So how long do I store it in Kafka? Because it's expensive, and is it the best thing to store it there? Typically today, most projects we see a retention time of 7 days, 30 days, some a year, rarely forever. This will change massively in the future, probably. I cannot talk too much about that, but maybe you take a look at our blog where you can read 8 weeks ago or so that a small team joined us a few weeks ago, and they have built a tiered storage for Kafka, which means that you have long-term storage for Kafka in things like AWS S3, for example. And with that, that's of course then a game changer for how you can use Kafka also as long-term storage, not just short-term. And with that, take a look at our website. There will be coming much more announcements about that in the future. For today, I can just say that without a tiered storage and only the hot storage in the persistent volumes or so, or local disks, typically people still think exactly how long they want to store it in Kafka, because most argument against it is it's getting too expensive when you have too much data in it. The scale is possible. As we saw with Netflix, six petabytes per day, it's more about cost typically then. But this will completely change in the next months, and then it will make it much, much easier and better for long-term storage of Kafka. Yeah, so the question was more about this model deployment directly in the Kafka Streams application versus in a model server, and about performance and so on. And here, definitely there is sometimes trade-offs, what is the better solution, and you probably have to evaluate both. The benefit of having it directly in the Kafka Streams application is mainly that you don't have this issue of having this HTTP or gRPC communication or somewhere else, right? That's the main the difference. The model itself performs the same way, of course. But so it's latency and performance, it's just the one part. But what's even more critical typically is really that you have this other flow. And if you have a distributed system, if you have just one Kafka Streams application which does the inference, it's much, much easier to monitor, to debug, and also to scale than if you have another server which you have to communicate with within the Streams application. Because again, it's not in the good case, but it's in the case of errors and failures. Then you have to think about how to handle that. That's the main difference. Not so much about how the model itself performs, probably. Okay, last question, and then I'm also here afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Is there a way for reference architecture where you can kind of integrate your streaming inference model into also an interactive application?
Yeah. So the question was related and is more about how, if you have a Streams application, how to still do it in an interactive way, for example, with a, let's say, web application or something like this, right? First of all, the important thing is stream processing is a really different concept than the request response. So you can merge it, and sometimes it makes sense totally. And that has then different challenges. There is a solution for that for Kafka Streams specifically. So with Kafka Streams, you can also use the feature of interactive queries. And what that means, to explain, so again, the stream is continuously, your continuous flow of data. But then you can do an interactive query into that at this timestamp and get the output of that. And that can be, for example, displayed in a web application. A second later, the stream is going on. So that as it's a stream, you don't have the most update data maybe here. But this is also a common combination. And this is then really the trade-offs, all the different concepts. And depending on your use case, you have to evaluate what makes sense. Is it just stream processing? Is it a combination of both? Is it just request response? I mean, there's also, for example, the REST proxy for Kafka, right? Or there's many trade-offs. There's always not the one best solution. OK, we're also at end of time. Thanks, and sorry for the technical problems. And thanks for joining me.